Jack.
This is Wes.
Me and Ryan. Ryan, I bought a house. Adult. Ryan's not here.
No.
Yesterday was his moving day.
Oh, was it?
Well, yesterday I think it was when he officially closed on his house.
Oh, okay.
And I, you know, I picked up bits and pieces about what he's doing. I don't think he's moving in like the same day, but he's in the process of moving. And it seems
bit
like
by bit.
Yeah, which, you know, when me and Dez bought this house, like we went and filled out all the paperwork and closing. It takes like an hour, maybe 2 hours to go through all the paperwork and all that. And at least in the state of Florida, it does.
Yeah.
And after that, they're like, all right, you close on the house. So, what are you guys doing the rest of the day? Like, oh, we're moving in. Like, we're going right now.
Yeah, we're going. We're going to go do this.
Right. Well, and you know, it was he hired a mover, which of course,
for the big stuff.
Is great that he doesn't have to bother us with that shit. but he, when me and Dez moved into this place, we like ditched all of our furniture from the old place. We kept like the kitchen table.
Yeah.
And that's it. I think we kept like a bed for one of the kids, but then we just ended up buying a new bed for the other one, and then Amiga just got a new bed anyway, so all the beds have been replaced. But like,
and you kept your chair.
We kept the chair.
What kind of chair is this, John, for the listeners?
It's one of those wicker bowl chairs that me and my older brother bought when we were like 12. We like pooled our birthday money together, and then I stole it, so now it's mine.
Wait, you bought this when you've had that? I knew you had this chair for the longest time.
Oh yeah,
not that long.
I've had this chair for like, what is it? How old am I now? I'm almost 36. I've had this chair for like more than 20 years. Yes.
Holy shit.
It's falling apart. It's not in good shape anymore.
It is. How can we fix it? I feel like something like this should at least attempt to preserve it.
Lots of tape. Lots of tape and just wrap it up and
just make it nice though.
Yeah. No, we don't need to make it nice. But like, this chair, this bookshelf to our right as we're sitting on the futon, the podcasting futon. And
that's what it's officially called.
Yeah. And the kitchen table and chairs. That's it. Everything else was chucked or donated.
Damn. Those couches were nice too. Why'd you get rid of the couches?
Which couch were we on by the time we moved?
I don't know. When I lived with you, those couches were nice.
Were they the beige ones?
I think so. Grayish?
And
no, they're the gray ones.
And then I eventually moved one into the podcasting room at that house.
Yes.
I liked those couches. Those were good couches. They fell apart.
Oh.
Eventually, I'm not just probably normal wear and tear. Like, the frame started to buckle and...
Wow.
Yeah. And the couches I have now, like, I do want to replace at some point. I'm not in any rush, though. But I actually found black couches that were very similar to those grayish beige ones in the old house, which was great because they were, like, because they had, like, the big fluffy armrests that were really, really nice. I found some black ones that looked a lot like it. And I ordered them, and a little while after I ordered them, it was just after we closed on the house, because you know, we wanted to make sure that all the paperwork was signed before we started ordering furniture. And I got a phone call from the company I ordered them from. I was like, hey, those ones you ordered, we don't have them. We found something similar. We can send you those instead. And of course, I just closed on the house, and didn't want to have to do any couch shopping. I was like, okay, fine. So they sent us those, and they're fine. But they're not
like
great.
$400 cheaper than what you bought.
I did get refunded some money, but when they arrived, it was like, this isn't really that similar to what I wanted, but it is what it is. Hey, buddy.
Dog.
Sherlock's here.
Yeah.
But that's Ryan's move. That's where Ryan is.
Yeah.
Ryan's off finding new couches.
Yeah. Well, that's nice. I'm sure he's picking them out with Busey and two of them are find something nice.
Yeah. They're going to have the fuck futon.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's a whole separate thing in a different room that's has very little lighting.
What sort of rooms do you think Ryan has at his new house? Like he's an accountant. So I imagine he makes some decent money. So he's probably got, like, a parlor and, like, a conservatory. He's probably bougie as fuck.
Oh, probably. Oh, man, I don't want a conservatory. No, what I want is one of those, like, dome rooms with the telescope.
An observatory.
Observatory, yes.
Yeah.
But I want to get rid of the telescope. Like, I have no use for that shit. I don't care what the stars.
You just want a dome roof.
I just want a dome roof in a big, massive area.
I mean, you can get, like, room, like...
filled with bookshelves.
Houses, oh, like a library, then, with a vaulted ceiling.
Yeah. You can do something, yeah, something like that. and then just replace the ceiling with glass and dome it.
This seems like a lot of like architectural work that you look.
My mom's husband's an architect. I can make him do it.
Okay. Works for me.
I'm going to do this.
All right, Greg, get on it. I assume his name is Greg.
No.
Okay.
No.
Gary?
No.
Okay.
Not even a G.
Oh. It has to be a G.
Wrong letter.
All right, so this is a mini show.
Yeah, not the furniture show.
Oh, shit. You know what? Did we even do the... this is the Nintendo show, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet.
Probably I don't think we made it past the right internet.
Okay. This is a Nintendo podcast. This is your first time downloading. You're probably super confused about what the fuck we're doing. This is a mini show. This is a mini show for the month of October 2020, in which we are... it's just a random topic. Anything we feel like talking about. I got some games that we can talk about. I also have some other non-gaming things that I'll get into.
One game and kind of a... No, I don't really need to talk about that.
Well, we can.
I got a movie and a game.
Oh, sweet.
I got a movie and a game.
So this this particular, we have some sponsors. This particular episode is brought to you by Almond Joy and Fresca. Speaking of which, have you finished The Boys season 2?
I did finish The Boys. Holy shit.
Okay, so we've both seen it. Just as a fair warning, we will get into some spoilers if you have not seen it.
You need to do something about your life.
We're not going to go through like plot point by plot point, but we're also not going to avoid things if it just comes up in a discussion. So, what did you think?
Boys, it was great. I was caught off guard by it already being the season finale. Because there were like 8 episodes in and just like, boom, here it is.
Yeah, and I think that... they did tie it up neatly to where I don't know if they've officially been renewed for a third season, but they could end it where it is. There are also some places they could take it, but I think they tied it off really nice. Like this is a stopping point, and we could continue with more shenanigans, but it's kind of like a nice little reboot point where you have your characters who have gone on to do different things. As opposed to all just being together, but I think that goes for like your hero characters, like as in your protagonist, the character you're supposed to be rooting for, as well as the antagonist, the characters you're not supposed to be rooting for, which in this case is the actual superheroes.
Yeah, which out of the ones that are left, we don't know if Black Noir is even alive. He's all fucked up.
I'm interested to see what they do with that character because, yeah, they had a really interesting way of just taking him off the bench. Just like, because he seems to be this sort of unbeatable, like, extremely good fighter with regenerative powers.
I was, for the longest time, I was like, what the fuck does this guy even do? Like, what's his thing? And it just turns out he just lives through everything.
He seems to have, like, good strength and durability, probably some enhanced speed as well as just regenerative powers.
Yeah.
So, I'm interested to see what they do with that character if they continue the series forward, because in the comics...
Oh, you read the comics.
I've read a little bit of the comics, and I'm familiar with a couple of plot points of the comics past where I've read. In the comics, he's actually a clone of Homelander.
Oh, shit.
And you don't find that out until, he gets the mask taken off. And, he's Homelander or anything. Like, yeah.
But he doesn't have Homelander powers.
In the comic, he would have Homelander powers, I think. I'm unclear about that point. But, he's aware of who he is in his situation. He's kind of there as a contingency to take out Homelander if, Homelander goes against the Vought Corporation.
Yeah.
But he's, of course, showing restraint so that no one gets wise to the situation.
Hmm.
But, yeah.
I think that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
That would be a really interesting... Wait for them to explore that character further, especially since Homelander really has taken a much deserved crash and burn. Like he really got some comeuppance, yeah. Which is great.
That's the thing with it, which I would be sad if they tied it up and this would be the last season, because there's still the whole Homelander to deal with. There's still all Vought to deal with. It didn't really, at the end of the day, they didn't really change anything. It's still the same shit. It's just the core of the Seven is kind of broken down.
Yeah, they sort of like put a stop to the... I guess we're just going directly into spoilers. They put a stop to the sort of machinations of the superhero manufacturing. It's not going to become like a widespread thing.
Hmm.
But what they did not do was shut down the sort of superhero industry in general. There's still heroes out there, and they're still able to do, like, use their powers, but they're going to be like a more regulated thing. It doesn't seem like they're going to have them in the military, which is sort of like the overarching goal in season one for the heroes.
And then season two was just supervillains and shit like that.
Yeah, yeah, sort of like the fallout of having the compound V, the formula that turns them into superheroes, and like the sort of the origins of that, which, you know, I think was a pretty cool intricate plot line where, you know, you very similar to sort of a Captain America origins, where you have like a Nazi German scientist coming up with this thing and then it being co-opted by American corporations or an American corporation that comes out of World War II. And then you get the character of Stormfront, which she had a whole lot of involvement in that sort of thing, because she's, in addition to all her other like electrical and flight powers and stuff, she also has like extended longevity.
Yeah.
Which was she really got her comeuppance too.
She really did. Holy hell, she got fucked up.
But see, the thing is, they didn't show her die.
No, they even addressed it. She's not dead.
Yeah.
They even addressed it. So they got her
somewhere. Well, you know, the thing is, like, Homelander addressed it, and you can't really trust the goddamn thing that comes out of his mouth.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So, I think you're right. I don't think we've seen the last of her, because she like show up in like a Professor X style chair with like no arms and no legs.
Which, here's another spoiler. I did like when Homelander showed up. He just looks at the kid. He's like, "Did you do this?"
Yeah.
Like, he just spilled a cereal on the floor or something. Did.
Yeah, yeah. This woman that he had been fucking, like, was this you?
What the fuck?
I didn't mean to. Like, all right, well, let's get out of here.
Which, I mean, he did.
Like, he knocked over like some soup cans in the store. Like, all right, let's bail before anyone notices.
They took a shit in the display toilet at Home Depot. Like, yep. Let's get the hell out of here. So, I mean, yeah, you did kill his mom, but at least she did get fucked into oblivion. Like, that was great.
Which was sad. Like,
it was. That's all coming.
Yeah, that was one of the things where, you know, despite Butcher being like this really brutal shithead, like, you didn't want him to have to suffer that way.
Yeah.
So
last thing I'm going to say on it is the head blowing up by a guy.
Yeah.
That because of that whole character and because of the boys being what it is, it's one of those shows where I really don't feel like I can predict what's going to happen. Like, I expect things just to happen now that I would not be preparing for. And because of that, it's a good thing, but it's also a bad thing. That last scene where Huey and Starlight, whatever her other name is, are sitting on that bench talking, I was really expecting Huey's head just to go pop. just to somehow throw us all off one last time, right? But pop, roll credits. I mean, just...
Oh, that'd be fucked up.
That would be really fucked up.
Because Huey's like one of... Like, those two characters are like kind of like the untouchable ones, the ones who are... They're genuinely trying to do the right thing, or like trying to be good people. Everyone else is going, whatever, fuck it. So it'd be messed up if they took one of those two off the board.
Yeah.
But like the whole like head popping thing, like, you see it early on in season two.
You just forget about it.
Well, because you think like you think it's in the comics she's called the female Kimiko. You think it's her brother because he's got like the telekinesis. So, you know, when he's off the board, you think, okay, maybe that's the last you've seen that, but then it happens again, and then there's a whole like bloodbath with all sorts of things happening.
Yeah, it's fucking Red Wedding up in this joint. Just
why is it that the thing with that, like the head popping thing, they set up these characters who you think are going to have like further machinations and more things to do, and then all of a sudden they just kind of get their heads popped. And I found it to be just a device that was undercutting their own drama. Like, okay, who's this guy? He's the leader of this sort of culty church who's trying to become this mainstream religion. And like, oh, okay, he's dead. And there was one other character who's...
Well, they were kind of done with him at that point. Because at that point, A-Train left, and then the Deep left. So it was kind of just like a thing to keep those two busy this season.
Yeah, maybe. You could see it that way. I don't think we've seen the last of Eagle the Archer either.
No.
I imagine him and Deep are still going to have some sort of... that's where I thought they were going. Like, him and Deep were going to start, like, trying to take down the weird culty religion that was just trying to manipulate people.
I don't even know what the fucking religion was. It was just known as the church. They handled it real badly, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, and I think it is intended to be, like, an allegory of, like, the really, like, Hollywood-style culty religions, like Scientology and that shit. Because they allude to the fact that Deep had to give them a lot of money, had to take all these classes.
How much would it suck if Scientology was right?
Oh, man, I'd be so embarrassed.
That'd be terrible.
You get on your 747, your golden 747 to this guy, and you meet Xenu, and you're like, well, god damn it.
I feel foolish. I feel like I got egg on my face. Just...
Waiter, I will take a plate of crow and a slice of humble pie. Scientology was right. So I thought like it was going to be a thing where Deep and Eagle the Archer and maybe even A-Train were sort of teaming up to try to take them down, but doesn't seem to be necessary anymore. He got his head popped.
Yeah, his head popped.
I think that one of the strengths of the show is that almost all of the characters have like their own arc, their own journey that they're on. You know, it's like A-Train and Deep and Huey and Frenchie. Like, everyone's got like their own sort of storyline. Mm. And they all sort of converge together to where, you know, they're working towards similar goals. But it's not like a typical like sort of ensemble cast where everyone is... united in a common goal. Everyone's got their own reasons, and I like that they have like this large menagerie of characters to work with, and they bring up characters who they've mentioned before, like Lamplighter.
Yeah,
enters the show, which is a really cool thing to pop up in season two.
I really wanted to do it in front of my statue.
Yeah, and did you get the feeling like when you realized that they were in? They like go into the conference room. It was like they're not there to find her. Like, I thought he was setting Huey up for something, but took a different turn, didn't it?
Yeah, it took a little bit of a twist.
Yeah,
and that the last little bit, what was it, one of the last few scenes? They're like, there's still like that giant bird pile in the middle of the room.
It's gross.
It's like somebody needs to take care of that. Somebody needs a mop up Lamplighter.
When the sprinklers went off, I thought they were gonna like he would actually survive through it. They had this horribly disfigured like burn victim.
Oh, him and Stormlight, just Stormfront. Yeah. The two of them. Yeah. I smell a sitcom. I'm telling you, man.
The sitcom smells of burn flesh. No, that's that sort of body horror stuff. I can't stomach that sort of stuff. But anyway, yeah. Like I'm getting back to the head popping thing, like. I don't know, I just thought it was like a device that they were used for shock a few times where they could have followed like an interesting storyline and giving characters interesting things to do, but instead they just kind of undercut it all. It's like, oh no, he's just dead.
Yeah, I mean, it was building up for that whole like legal thing and then head pop and...
Yeah,
we're building up for that and then just threw it right out the window in like 4 seconds.
We were about to have like a whole courtroom drama going on, yeah. And then all of a sudden, like, oh no, everyone's just gonna die.
Yeah, people are just gonna hit pop left and right.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm on board if they do another one. So
yeah, me too.
I hope so.
It is graphically violent, which you know they really lean into at times. But yeah, I'm totally down if they do more. What's your movie? But wait, before we get to your movie, Steven Smash.
Oh, yeah. Bright.
Steven Smash.
And then my coworker Thomas walked up from his break, and he was like, Steven Smash. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? I don't know how I feel about this. It's fine.
I was a cranky old man when I did a solo show a couple weeks back, and I try not to make pass too much judgment because I haven't indulged in any of the DLC characters, and I think Ryan has probably played more Smash than the both of us, because like last I looked at his activity, he's putting like 90 hours.
Oh shit.
Yeah, I had no idea he was playing that much.
I mean, we only do it at game nights, and then we haven't had any game nights.
Yeah, then the world ended.
So,
yeah, I mean, I just don't... it's going to sound like so snobby and like exclusionist. Like, I don't like non-Nintendo characters in my Nintendo games. I don't like,
I mean,
I look forward to the day where they do roster contraction and like they release a Smash Brothers game where it's just Nintendo characters again.
It's a, I'm fine with Steve. Minecraft's on it now. Minecraft's on Switch now.
So sure is.
It's
yeah.
fine. I feel like it fits. All right. Not okay. well, but if it's okay. It's when the fans are blowing up and complaining, like, why don't we have Sora from Kingdom Hearts?
Yeah,
like,
fuck well, Kingdom Hearts.
I can't
think
of anything more bizarre to put into Smash games. Mm. I mean, how many Kingdom Hearts games have been on Nintendo systems? I only can think of one. Maybe two.
There was one on the GBA.
Oh, yeah.
And then there were a couple. Like, they're mostly, like, handheld. When they appear on Nintendo systems, they're on handhelds. And then there's like that rhythm game coming out in a few weeks.
I mean, there hasn't been a mainline Kingdom Hearts game. Like, the main storyline has not been put on the Switch.
I mean, it's
no
true.
Reason. I feel like that's a stupid to put Sora in it.
But Cloud's in there.
I also think Cloud is stupid to be on there.
Yeah, I think
like
I think
as a character, he's a lot of fun. I play him, but I do think it's stupid that he's.
I also think they should have gone with Zidane or Vivi.
Yeah, I would have loved a Vivi.
Wouldn't that be great?
Oh my god! Which, oh no, they do have Final Fantasy VII game on there now.
Yeah,
yeah. I would have loved a Vivi.
Yeah. I think like generally speaking, like the Final Fantasy IX aesthetic fits in more with like a Nintendo vibe. You know.
Yeah, it does.
Just definitely. Sort of like goofy and outlandish.
Yeah, it does. I agree.
But yeah, Steve's in Smash.
He does weird things. Like there's different ore that he digs up and different weapons.
And it's like...
He crafts things. Like, what the fuck,
man? It's like stage specific, like area specific too. If you're like on a certain part, you'll dig up like gold and that has different properties to where you're like somewhere else and you're digging up, I don't know, stone or whatever it is you dig up in Minecraft.
I mean, they're starting to get a little weird with these characters. I mean, Smash Brothers is like, I'm going to hit you in the face really hard. Now I have to be like, oh, I have to dig this up. I have to craft this real quick. And then... Oh, you're hitting me? Oh, okay.
I can see like it being like... difficult to use in a sort of like really like intense competitive setting, but if you're really good with that character, I can see being really impressive to see.
Yeah.
But yeah, like this is the sort of thing where, you know, I look forward to the day where it's just kind of back to basics. But and who knows if that ever happens? Like maybe they have it worked out to where Smash Ultimate is just the platform now, and the platform continues on whatever like the next system
is.
No,
the next one we're only have X amount of it, and then they're going to the people that complained about Pokemon are going to start complaining about this.
Mm, yeah.
Like, how do we not have all the Pokemon in this
game? Where's Pac-Man? Where's
all 800 Pokemon aren't?
Mm. As long as we get 12 more Fire Emblem characters, I'm fine with. Some contraction.
They're all the fucking same.
Well, the problem is...
Does Ike's the difference?
I think the problem is that they keep on picking the protagonists
and the sword wielders and
well,
shit.
And the thing is, like, the protagonists of the most recent Fire Emblem games have always been, like, a mix of a sword wielder and some sort of mage, except for in Fates, where it was a sword wielder and a Manaquite.
So also, this new one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sword wielder and mage. Yeah, well, you can take.
Oh yeah, he is. I'll think about the heads of the three houses because none of them are sword users.
But yeah, Byleth can go in any direction. Take that character. They kind of like want you to end up as like the enlightened one class where it's swords
and
magic. But my most recent run through, I took Byleth to assassin.
I've been wanting to take him down to the dark mage.
Yeah, that'd be kind of fun.
I really like the Dark Mage class.
Mm.
I think that one's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I think it's really cool in Three Houses how you have like those like hidden classes again to where you like have to do specific things to unlock it.
I wish there was more because there's only like the one.
Mm. Yeah, that's something that they haven't really supported much in like in post game stuff. Like here's an update and it allows you to get this class. Like they did add. New classes with the Ashen Wolves, like the story pack that they did. It was like 7 or 8 missions, and you get 4 new characters. And those 4 characters have like their specific classes.
Fire Emblem?
Yeah.
The
Three Houses. Yeah.
Really? I didn't know about this DLC.
Yeah, there's a DLC earlier this year, and it was 7 or 8 missions, and it was kind of a side story. You and then the three house heads plus one member from the three houses, and then four new characters, and they each had like their own specific class. And once you beat those three missions, you could then recruit them into your house in the main storyline when you start a game. But yeah, I mean, it was all right. Like, some of the missions, like, I was really impressed with sort of like the intricacy of like your goals in the mission. Like, you had to defeat enemies or capture areas in a specific order, that kind of thing.
I've been wanting to play it again. It's been a minute. I still haven't gotten through the blue whatever.
Lions?
Yeah, there.
Yeah. I played through their storyline. The one I haven't done yet, I haven't done the
alternate for the Black Eagles.
Yeah, I haven't done the alternate, but I did do Golden Deer twice.
I feel like doing Golden Deer.
Because they're the best.
Yeah.
The objective best.
I was really hoping All in the Way had multiple storylines and stuff.
That'd be kind of fun.
Yeah.
But yeah. So that's Steven Smash.
Yeah, that's Steven Smash. We always do weird tangents in these things.
What was the movie you saw?
I saw, because it was on sale for $30, a collection of all three of the John Wick movies. I only saw the first one, though.
I've never seen any of those.
It is over the top, an abundance of headshots.
Okay.
Just, that's all this man knows. His entire life has been building up to just headshots. And that is his full repertoire of capabilities, is just bullet to the head.
If he tried to shoot someone in the chest, do you think he'd miss?
No, he does a couple times, but he always finishes with a headshot.
Okay.
Like, everybody gets a headshot.
He's got to make sure.
Yeah, just every fucking character.
I'm doing you a favor of not letting you come back as a zombie.
No, I actually enjoyed the movie. It's very shallow story. It's one of those movies you're just watching for just over-the-top violence.
Hmm.
Just so many. The body count's got to be, like, in the 70s. Like, it's just extreme. But the premise of the movie is this dude's wife dies. John Wick's wife dies. And after the funeral and the wake and every, you know, all that stuff, he gets a delivery. And it's a dog in a cage with a note from his dead wife saying, "You need to love something. Here's this."
And that's the end of the first movie.
No, that's just the first movie. This first... And he does, you know, he like feeds it cereal out of a... Gets it cereal like a human because he doesn't have dog food yet.
Okay.
There's this random scene where he's on an airfield and he's just driving around really fast on an airstrip with the dog in the car. Like, I have no idea why. Like, doing weird turns and shit. It's very odd. And then at a gas station, some Russian kid... Not like kid, but you know. 20 whatever. Some guy wants to buy his car. He says no. And then later that night, him and the kid and his buddies break in, beat the living shit out of him, steal his car, and kill his dog.
Uh-oh.
And then the whole movie just proceeds into him going on a murder spree.
Yeah, he killed the dog.
Yeah, he killed the dog, which you never do. Immediately...
No. No.
You kill a dog in a movie, you're immediately on that guy's side. You're like, nope, let's go kill them all. Like,
uh-huh.
Just,
yeah.
Headshot's too good for me.
You hurt an animal in a film, like, there's no redeeming.
It's really fucked up, too, because you see this one part where he's, like, waking up, and the dog's, like, lying, like, in front of him, staring at him.
Mm.
Like, they just moved the dog and set it right in front of him. Like, here's your dead dog. It's really fucked up. But,
yeah. God damn, that sounds unwatchable.
Just that first part. But then the rest of it... you're just good with everything.
Hmm.
And all the story arcs and everything are very, very shallow. I mean, Keanu Reeves probably has like 12 lines of the whole movie. He's the character. It's very quiet.
Okay.
But he's just murder spree.
Hmm.
It was fun. I haven't seen the other two yet, but...
You mentioning the dog reminded me of... There's that episode.
Mentioning dog murder.
Speaking of dog murder, back to the boys. There's that one episode where, you know, you meet Butcher's dog.
The entire time I'm like, this dog, nothing better happened to this fucking dog.
No, the dog was an Easter egg, because in the comic, the dog is more of like a partner. He's one of the boys. Like,
oh, is he?
Yeah, the dog goes on missions with them.
Oh, shit.
And like, you know the part in the show where, like, you know, he's saying goodbye to the dog. He's like, okay, you got to stay here. And then, like, gives him the toy and, like, tells the dog to fuck it. That's another Easter egg, because that's something that Butcher would do, like when he brings the dogs on missions, like when he like just kind of wants to like disrespect someone he's like trying to beat up or kill, he'll tell the dog whose name is escaping me, like, fuck it. And like the dog will like pounce and like start humping.
While they're alive or after he kills them?
While they're alive.
Okay. Which, I don't know. Yeah, that's really
bad. Don't be rude, Sherlock.
Speaking of humping it, just walks up and starts sniffing my crotch.
Sherlock, that's not what we do to guests. Sir.
Yeah, you do that when they leave.
Uh-huh. So.
Get the peanut butter.
But yeah, I'm not encouraging this behavior that they do in comic books, Sherlock. You need to behave yourself. So, yeah, just the dog reminded me of that little
That's a fun little Easter egg.
Yeah.
That's pretty fun. I wish they did that. That would be cool.
Had the dog a more...
I think that would have been a great partner. Little additional thing.
As long as the dog's head...
is very mobile right now.
As long as the dog doesn't get his head popped, you know, that would be unconscionable.
God, that would suck.
Yeah.
Just for no reason.
So...
How about game? You got a game?
I got some games. I'm not going to spend too much time on any of them in particular.
How many
games
do you have?
Four.
You play so many games where Ryan and I tend to just dive into a game for an extended period.
So, I'm speaking of diving into a game, I finished Xenoblade. I'm done with it for now.
When was the last time you've seen your children?
I haven't done earlier today. They're fine. I can go another week now, I think.
Oh, real quick though, how was your trip?
It was okay.
Yeah,
they enjoyed staying at a hotel. They liked being at the beach. When we went early in the morning on Saturday, you know, it was not super early, like 8:39. We went down to the beach and they're there. We were there for like an hour and a half, 2 hours. Then we got rained out, so you know, we left. We got lunch. We hung out in the hotel room, and then went back down at early afternoon, like 2, something like that, and. After a little while, it started raining again. I'm like, never mind, we're toughing it out. And like, it rained pretty hard for like 10 or 15 minutes, and then it stopped. And then they were back at it. So, yeah, it was pretty good. The next morning, Ripley wanted to go down again. I was like, no, we gotta go. We're going home.
You're going home.
Yeah, we gotta go rescue Sherlock, who's probably wondering what happened to us. Oh, finished Xenoblade. Beat the final boss. I also did all of the side quests I could find, I cannot find anymore.
Which, at the point that you were doing with it, I mean, how easy was the final boss?
Very easy. It was our buddy Kevin on the Discord group phrased it as an interactive cutscene. And yeah, not too far from the truth. Because, you know, my main party at the end there was... Shulk, Fiora, Dunban, who are all very good at dealing out damage. I did consider for a little while switching out Dunban for someone else because he just doesn't deal as much damage as Fiora is capable of damaging. She is, for my money, like the most powerful character in the game just in terms of dealing out raw damage, because you can get her to where, you know, her... auto attacks are dealing a ton of damage and you're critting all the time, and doing auto attacks builds up your basically your special meter. For Shulk it's his Monado powers, and for Fiora when you have her like equipped as a speedy character, her special attack can deal out a ton of damage. So she was doing most of the heavy lifting, and then Shulk was throwing down a lot of like I would play it as Shulk primarily, and I also did a setup to where I was like speeding up my auto attacks and trying to set up like double attacks to fill up my Monado powers. And I would basically do auto attacks and Monado powers as much as I can just to set up shields and avoid taking damage, because I didn't have a healer in the party. Okay, Shulk has some minimal healing skills, but...
Okay, so Dunban is your tank, drawing the attention and stuff, while Shulk is your support character, keeping everybody generally alright, and then Fiora is the hard hitter.
Yep. And you know, and you can get away with that, even at the end of the game where you're fighting enemies stronger than you, because, you know, if you keep everyone equipped with, you know, your gems to buff up their agility, you're doing a pretty good job of avoiding damage. But anyway, Xenoblade wasn't on my list to talk about it. But I finished it and did all the side quests, like as many of the side quests as I could. I haven't technically 100%ed it because there are still items in the Collectopedia I need to get. I haven't maxed out everyone's affinity at this point. It's pretty much everyone's like a 50-60% affinity as near as I can tell with Ricky.
God, you just hate Ricky.
You know, I did some research, and he's a character who can have some use. A lot of what I was seeing about a good build for him, it's a lot about putting, like, status ailments on opponents and then using one of his moves that takes all those status ailments off, but for every ailment that's on there, he does a lot of damage. Hmm. So he's a character who, you know, can definitely function in a party, but I never had him in the party. Pretty much the only reason I had any affinity with him at all is because, you know, like in Xenoblade 2, you can just give gifts to each other back and forth with all, like, the little collectibles that you find.
Yeah.
And I would just spam those on him. Like, okay, somebody builds some affinity with this guy. But yeah, like, there's a lot of different configurations you can do. Sharla can be a competent healer when you get her affinity up with a lot of other characters.
Hope so. That's like her whole purpose.
Yeah. Ryan is a really great tank. Like, just like, and like the like purest, most distilled definition of a tank, he is stuff that will just draw all the aggro and has like max HP by like level 60. So he just a big old slab of meat ready to take all the punishment for you. But yeah, then there's other things that I could 100% that I probably won't end up doing because, you know, do you ever mess around with upgrading your arts in Xenoblade?
A little bit, yeah.
So, you know, you gain, like, EXP for your level, and you gain, like, your AP. That's, like, your bank of points to use to upgrade your arts. So everything has, like, the first three rectangles, or the first four rectangles, and the next three, and the next three. And you unlock them by buying, like, these tomes, these instruction books that'll teach you. Like, here's intermediate backslash. And the way you get the advanced slots, the final three rectangles to upgrade these skills, is you have to defeat enemies that will give them to you. And some of these things have like 5% and 7% drop rates.
Gross.
Fighting monsters and bosses that are like level 98, 99.
Gross.
Which, you know, with a well-built party, isn't a huge deal as long as like you're within a similar level range. But yeah, I spent a little bit of time fighting a boss who was level 98. And I was like, no, level 96, 97, so it wasn't a big deal. But just to like beat him three or four times and not get the drop and like figure out like, oh, this is a 5% drop. Never mind. And I haven't found a way, like in Xenoblade 2, how you can just kind of max out your luck and use that to grind cores, to try to get your lucky cores. I haven't found a way to manipulate the system like that to get these rare drops. So I'm like, well, I guess that's something I want 100%. But yeah, so a game that another game I finished. Let's just go over there. I played through Tiberian Sun. We talked about that on a retro show. I beat both the Nod and the GDI campaigns.
Which one you prefer?
I prefer GDI, I think, because the Nod units, it's a lot of stealth and not a whole lot of I'm torn because they're balanced really well, because I also do like just the long range capabilities of Nod units, like their artillery, mm-hmm. Set up really well just to kind of like put bases under siege. I also really like the bombers that the GDI use, the Orca bombers, for some really efficient airstrikes. So one thing that I like about the game in general is both sides have missions set up to where you have to do a lot of sort of like espionage tactics, or you have to capture a base, or working with limited resources in order to overcome an obstacle. But then a lot of missions where, you know, you have just a set group of units, they also give you a couple of engineers to where if you can find a vulnerable spot in like an enemy encampment, you can take it over and start to like turn the mission, as opposed to like just having a small strike force turned the mission into, okay, now you actually have a limited base that you can use to build a more overpowering force. One thing about the game that I think that was a mistake is the last mission for the Nod faction has a timer. You have to beat it within a certain amount of time. And it's 3 hours in-game, but the timer, depending on your game speed, moves a little bit quicker than, of course, real time. And yeah, I generally don't like that sort of thing, especially in an RTS, because part of the fun of the game is like building the base the way you want it and like being able to withstand any sort of attack that they're going to throw against you, and then building your force to go take out their base. Whereas, you know, when there's a timer, you have to be thinking, okay, what's going to be the most efficient way I can get through this quickly, because I don't want to run out of time and have like wasted all this time only to lose. Mm-hmm. The GDI mission, like last mission, also has a timer. Thankfully, you can eliminate the timer by destroying three particular like missile launcher units scattered around the map. So once you know where those are, you can kind of like build up your small force to go kill it. What'll happen is there's basically three like nuclear missile launchers around the map, and once you like get into like start building your base, a timer will start. You have 1 hour to go destroy this one, and once you find where it is, it just took like 10 little like jump jet infantry to just fly over and shoot it, and I was able to take it out pretty easily. But then once you destroy that one, the timer will start over at an hour. It's like, okay, now you got to find another one, and that'll happen 3 times. And all 3 times, it doesn't take an overwhelming force to take them out, which was good because it allowed me to focus on actually building up some defense. There's a lot to manage on that mission, because while you're like dealing with this timer and trying to build up your force to go kill the thing to get rid of the timer, they're also launching a lot of bombs at you. And there were a lot of times where I'd be trying to build an air force. I'd be trying to build my bombers. That way I can just go bomb their bases and, you know, take out the things I need to take out in order to continue progressing and reset the timers. And they kept on bombing my helipads, my airfield. So that whenever I got it built up, I was like, here comes a missile. Like, well, fuck, set up the firestorm defense to intercept the missile. And I would always click on it too late. Like, oh, I just lost 4 helipads.
I forgot about that firestorm defense. Mm. I love that.
Yeah, the firestorm defense. There were a few times right toward the end where I actually, like, kept the screen where I was just set up to where I could just click on it real quick, because it's on your taskbar, like with all the stuff that you can build. And it'd be cool if like they just had it like hotkeyed to something.
Yeah.
So you can like missile launch detected. Okay, press function 9, and there we go. We set up the firestorm defense. And there were a couple of times where I had it set up to where like it saved my butt, and like it saved my Air Force from being taken out yet again, because I was able to set up the firestorm defense around the helipads, because they would always fucking bomb them. That was always the target. But yeah.
Man, there's a lot of fun little things in that game. I forgot all about that firestorm defense.
Mm-hmm. One of the cool things about the last GDI mission too was there is an old GDI base from the original game. In one of the corners of the map that you can go and find and get like 3 old-school mammoth tanks from it, which was fun to have them available. It would have been really, really cool if you could actually like get to that base and build old stuff. That would have been kind of like a classic throwback. But anyway, it's not really that big a deal. But yeah, played through them both. Had a lot of fun. I wish there wasn't those timers so I wasn't feeling the pressure on the last missions, but overall, good time. You got a game?
I got one game.
Shoot.
And, I don't even know how to approach this monster of a thing.
What's the game? Let's start there.
It's a free-to-play.
Okay.
It's called Genshin Impact.
Oh, sure. I know the one.
Have you seen this?
Yes.
You watched a lot of videos or anything on this? Or?
No. It's coming to Switch at some point.
I think it already is.
Really?
It may be.
Off to luck.
I could be wrong. But this game steals a ton of stuff from Breath of the Wild.
Yep.
Holy hell.
Sure does.
The big open world feels like you're in Breath of the Wild. Some of the sounds of interacting with certain things are like straight copies from Breath of the Wild. Mm-hmm. It's anime, a little bit more RPG, Breath of the Wild.
Oh, put a pin in it for a second. Did you see the thing where Capcom said that Monster Hunter Rise is not inspired by Breath of the Wild?
Okay. I did not.
But you know, Capcom, shut up. shut the fuck up.
At this point, if you're doing an open world and those colors are even remotely close to Breath of the Wild, it's
we know what you're doing. They were like, oh no, we were like wanting to do like vertical like climbing and stuff like that before this, and this game was in development. Like, shut the fuck up. It's okay. No one cares that you were inspired by Breath of the Wild. In fact, it makes your game more interesting.
Yeah, now I want to mess with it because it's Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
The climbing isn't as smooth as Breath of the Wild.
Okay.
But you can't just climb shit. So far, I'm pretty good little chunk into it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm liking it. It's very mellow. There's not a whole lot to go on. It's not very complex. The enemies so far have been pretty easy. Even like the enemies that are kind of tough really aren't tough. I've in no situation anywhere near possibly dying in any of these fights.
Okay.
It's very simple, very straightforward. So you make parties of four, which you can switch in between however you want. They're not all active at times. Pretty much you're just switching the one character on the... It's like you have four reserved, you can switch to whenever you want.
So you create your party, and like your party isn't like running around with you, it's just like your solo dude.
You're just running by yourself, but then you can just change whoever your character is within your party, which... Each character has an elemental affinity, and having multiples on there do give you kind of bonuses, like two lightning will give you increased crit or whatever, and two of this would do that. But it's nothing huge. And all the characters have two abilities. One has to build up by combat. You get like energy and it fills it up, and the other one's just a cooldown. And then the other than that, it's just passives. And it's not a lot, even like a lot of passes. There's no character building to them, really. It's just, this is kind of how the character is. And the reason why for that is because if you want to, you can't put money into it.
Of course.
Because there's like 27, maybe 30 characters that you can unlock. But you unlock them through essentially loot boxes. It's kind of closer to using cores in Xenoblade. So if you're doing like 10 at a time.
Is there a way to get those without paying for them?
Yeah. Okay. Throughout, whenever you complete quests or opening chests and things like that, you get something called Primogem, which is their kind of currency.
Mm-hmm.
And after X amount of those, you can use those to get an orb, and then 10 orbs would be a thing. And then also, if you want more Primogems, you can buy other kinds of gems, I forget what they're called. And those are just directly convert into Primogems, which will convert into the core.
So what you're doing is you're using your real money to buy the thing that gets you the Primogems, that gets you the core.
Yeah, exactly.
Uh-huh.
It's really dumb. And it's really... The way it is it's like those... Chunks of this game is designed for mobile, it looks like. Mm-hmm. I've played some mobile games where they have different... If you spend your orbs in this selection, you have a higher chance to get these kind of things, or you can, like... toggle over to this other selection, you have a higher chance to get these kind of things with the orbs.
Uh-huh.
It looks like a mobile game when you do that kind of stuff, but most of the time when you use your orbs, you're getting weapons, and there's a chance for a character to drop.
Okay. So with the weapons, like you change out your equipment, kind of like Breath of the Wild, where you have better swords and spears and shit?
Each character use one weapon.
Okay.
So there's some characters that use swords, bows, claymores, and kind of like a book or this orb thing. So they use one of those.
Okay.
And there are different ones with different stats and different passives and things like that. And your characters have their own level that they're leveling. You have an overall adventure level that you're leveling. And then each of your items have a level that you can level.
Okay.
And then there's also artifacts, which are kind of like side equipment that give you other passes and stuff. And each of those you can level.
Uh-huh.
And you do all of this through getting more stuff. So let's say you want to put some levels in a sword. You can use six swords as materials to level up your one sword.
Hmm.
And then once it hits level 20, you can do something else to unlock it to go further. Same with your characters. Like, they have level caps. And once they hit level 20, you have to ascend them in order to open up another level, set levels of 20. that you can go, and then you have to ascend them again.
How much does ascension cost?
It's ascend, you need like specific materials and then game gold, not actual money gold. It's really weird. It's super weird. And your overall adventure level is really a way for the game to keep you in check, so you don't just go off. Like, I'm at this point where the next main story quest I can do, I have to hit adventure level 18, and I'm 17. So that forces me to go do side quests and stuff. And doing pretty much anything in the game, you get experience. You just open a chest, you get experience. You find a thing, you get experience. You kill stuff, you get experience.
Give them some money, you get experience.
It is a heavy, heavy hour dump game.
Okay.
And it's a free-to-play. Mm-hmm. So I enjoy it. It's very chill. There's certain combos that they do other things with them.
So when you're building your party, like you have like characters that are sort of like, here's a claymore user, here's a bow user. Is there like an advantage to having a diverse party, or just kind of like pick the weapon that you like and pick as many of those as you want?
I mean, I don't really know. It's pretty much you use what you want. I like keeping one character in my party, even though she is kind of the weakest, just because she's the only bow user I got. So it's nice to have a little extra range at times. She's also the only fire user I got, which is annoying. The game does give you some characters by storyline. I think I have one more character I can unlock.
So it's not like you select these four and those are like your characters that you're going to use. Like, you have a bigger roster, but you only have four at a time that you can switch between?
You set up a party of four, but you can have this huge roster of characters you can unlock, but you have to put them into your party.
So when you're out adventuring, you can only switch between characters that are in your party.
Correct.
Okay.
And then you can just toggle them out whenever you want, but you have to like open up the menu and shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they have whole big range to them. And the game only gives you X amount by default. You have to use orbs to get the other ones.
Of course you do.
So you may get some, you may not. You may get a good one, you may not. I mean, just...
Can you get repeats?
Yes.
Oh, and no. And
they're used as materials to ascend them later on.
Of course they are.
It's a free-to-play game that's modeled after a mobile game, but they put it on all the consoles, because they actually... I don't know, it chugs a little bit on my PS4. It's not the smoothest of games. I think the best platform for this is a good gaming PC. I think this is the best platform for it.
Because
if your PC can just run it smoothly, then boom, off you go. But I don't think the console runs it perfectly. It's fine. Like, I'd rather play it on my console than my PC, but...
Yeah, the game looks interesting. I've been interested in it for a while, pretty much because of all the Breath of the Wild comparisons. And it's one, like, you know, when it makes its way to Switch, I'll give it a shot.
Yeah, it may be something just to mess with here and there, because it's a free play. There is multiplayer, and it is cross-platform.
Okay.
So I can play with you on my PlayStation, you know, on your Switch. I may just make a new one on the Switch. Who knows? Who fucking knows what I'll do. So I have a mobile version of it. But, Penny Arcade did a few comics on it,
which
were pretty funny, and one of them addressed something I did not know, that if you're in somebody else's world, you can't open chests.
Oh.
So I thought that was kind of interesting. So.
Hmm.
I don't know. It's fun. I like it. It's very anime, and it's very, like, wholesome.
Power of friendship and all that?
That kind
of
shit, yeah. Uh-huh. It does that kind of garbage. There is a glider.
Oh, okay.
You know, in Breath of the Wild, you have your big glider.
Yeah.
So this is two little wings pop out from the back of you.
Okay.
And you glide with that. Really.
Yeah. Seems appropriate for the sort of vibe that they're going in the game.
You have a companion who essentially talks for you, because your main character doesn't talk.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Which you can take him out of your party.
Okay.
If you want to.
How would you the main character then?
He's just there to like drive the story. But this small character, it's a small kid essentially that flies and just constantly floats around you. So it's your Navi or your typical fairy that comes with you everywhere.
So wait.
From both of the games.
When they hit those story beats.
It's your Midna. Yeah, that's a better comparison. It's your Midna.
When they hit those story beats, like if your main character is not in your party, does he still
pops up. They do their conversation and then he vanishes back to the other character.
He runs up, he's out of breath doing the cuts. I guess it doesn't matter if he's out of breath or not, since he doesn't do any talking. He's like, I need to stand here for this. Everyone, do your things. I'm not gonna say anything, but I need to be here.
I need to be here. This is my shit, alright.
I like it. So
it's all right. I think it's fine. It's a free to play game, so there's no reason not to try it out, see if you like it. It's chill, which is what I like about it. It's very, there's good chunks of this I know you will just really like, but there's a lot of things about it that I think would ruin it for you.
Mm.
Like the exploration is definitely there. There's a lot of stuff to go look around. The chests and stuff do repopulate over time, I think. So there's,
how's the map?
Huge. And the map is just like Breath of the Wild's little map in the corner.
Cool.
So, I mean, the map is huge and extensive, and there's fast travel points, and I think this game really speaks to you in those kind of aspects. But the character gets, and the leveling, and all that kind of stuff, just the cringy free-to-play mobile aspects of it, I think may turn it off for you, but the exploration may keep you in for a while.
I know. As long as I can ignore them, it might be fine. But yeah, well, we'll see. Most important thing, though, where is the Bosh Kala shrine?
Oh, Bosh Kala. I fucking love that shrine.
What a great name.
That is really good. There's so many, like, oh. It's, yeah. I just got into a new area. A lot of this you will like, so definitely worth a try whenever it's available.
Cool. So, I got 2 credits in Mario Sunshine. Game is beaten.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So.
In Sunshine?
Yep.
Damn.
Yeah, I got all the stars in Mario 64 a few weeks ago, and I've been kind of plugging away at Sunshine. I'm just doing like 5 shines a day. Like, that game is real grindy in terms of what you need to do in order to get all these shines. Mario 64 has, 15 different levels, and each one has 6 stars. There's hidden stars throughout the castle, and then in each level you need to get 100 coins in order to get a bonus star in those stages. So Mario Sunshine, it does a similar thing, except it has fewer levels. I think it has 8 levels, and each one has 10 stars plus an 11th, or 10 shines plus an 11th shine for collecting 100 coins. But then also in each level there are 30 blue coins, which you can collect and then take to a shop in the main hub and exchange 10 of them for an additional shine. So it's a lot more fragmented. And thankfully there are some really handy guides on that there YouTube that will show you where all these blue coins are. Because there's no way in hell that I'm going to go in there blind and seek all these things out. Especially because there are several of them that are just kind of hidden in the sand on this beach. And you have to spray this spot of sand with no like signifying factor with your water gun. And then all of a sudden a symbol will appear. I think this game presumes that you are going to be spending a lot of your time just running around with your water gun squirting everything like some sort of maniac. And no, I don't do that.
No, if I were to have a big water pack like that, I probably would.
But then you get bored with it, and then you'd move on.
Actually, I would, yeah.
But like, I'm not going to go spray all the sand on the beach in order to make sure that there's nothing there. I don't know. Like, I think that there are some things in this game that are deliberately vague. And some of those also pertain to just like your general goals. Like when you enter a level, like a lot of Mario games, Mario 64, Mario Sunshine, Mario Galaxy, they'll kind of like tell you, they'll give you a description of the level, and it kind of like gives you a hint as to what your goal is. And there are a lot of times in Sunshine where I'll enter a level, I'll get the name of it, don't tell me the goal, I'm like, all right, what? What am I supposed to do? I don't know what this means. And I think that's kind of a problem with 3D platformers in general, not exclusive to this game, is that a lot of times, like, in these 3D platformers, and like Donkey Kong 64, Banjo-Kazooie, even Mario 64 to an extent, I think Mario 64 did a really good job of giving you enough of a hint and having the level built well enough to where, you know, you generally had an idea of where you should go. But they give you these open arena type levels, and then they say, just kind of go do stuff. And I think, like, at a certain point, it stops becoming fun just to kind of, like, poke around these levels.
This coming from the Breath of the Wild.
But the thing was, in Breath of the Wild, like, the geography is so interesting. And it's like, the point is just to kind of go look at stuff. Whereas in Mario Sunshine, you want to be like, okay, and like Mario games in general, especially 2D Mario games, you know, like, okay, I am on this side of the screen. My objective is to get to that side of the screen. If I find some stuff along the way, cool. But I know where I'm going at all times. And when they throw you into like these 3D Mario levels and you don't know the general direction you should be going in, you lose a sense of progress. Whereas in things like Breath of the Wild, even Mario Odyssey, you always have a sense of progress because you're always finding something. But, you know, you go a certain amount of time in these arena levels without finding things, and it just kind of becomes uninteresting. Hmm. There are limited amounts of that in Mario Sunshine in general. You know where you're going. Just a handful of levels here and there where there's just unclear of what you should do. And there are also a lot of levels where, you know, you'll get to a starting point and they'll set up these billboards with arrows on them, go that way, and then kind of lead you in the direction very overtly. They might as well have, like, Luigi come out there and hold your hand. So, I don't know. I don't entirely object to that, though, because it's like they couldn't find that balance between how much do we show them and how much do we allow them to figure out what they need to do. And it seems like they should have, like, flip-flopped what they actually did. Whereas where they were showing you what to do, they shouldn't have. And where they not showing you where to go, they should have. There are also some mechanical issues that I've been experiencing. The responsiveness to the jump isn't as reliable as it was in Mario 64. There were several times early on I was playing the game where I would go to, like, running up to a ledge, and I'm going to jump right at the edge of the ledge so I get the max distance that I can from this jump, and then I go to jump, and then I find myself falling instead of jumping. And I eventually had to, like, adjust the way I was playing the game, where I had to plan my jump before the ledge, because it seemed like the detection was, you know, if you are reaching the ledge and also trying to jump at the same time, the game is going to be like, nah, you're going to fall.
I ran into that a lot, too. Mm. I was having a really hard time with that game because I just ended up just falling for no reason.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, there are also some other technical hiccups. There were some points when, you know, I would land on a platform. Like, there are these characters that just kind of toss you in one level specifically, and I would get thrown up to a higher ledge, and, you know, like, your momentum, like, you hit the ground, your momentum slows down, you kind of bounce into a wall. And there was a time when, you know, I bounced on the ground, bounced into a wall, and then bounced backwards, safe on the platform, but then it launched me off the edge anyway, even though it sort of reversed my momentum of where I was going. Yeah, it was bizarre. It was like, that was a weird technical hiccup, and I wasn't able to duplicate it. So it just must have just been this weird thing that happened, that the game just kind of confused itself. But, you know, I started playing the game trying not to rely on the hover, but it's what the game wants you to do. Like, it wants you to use that hover to extend your jump or to sort of get your bearings. And once you get used to using that, you know, the platforming becomes a lot more manageable than, you know, if you're just trying to do it without that hover pack. And I think that in general, it's more of a platformer than Mario 64 is, just like in the strict sense of the word. Like, you are doing a lot more jumping around onto platforms than you do in Mario 64. But I just like the construction of the levels better in 64. I think that there are more interesting layouts and, like, more interesting locations they send you. They're kind of confine themselves to sort of like the beach town aesthetic and Sunshine. But, you know, with that said, I think I talked a little bit about the positives on a previous show. Like, I like the side somersault jump. I think that feels really good. The spin jump, some of the other, like, mechanics that Mario uses, I think work really well. I like when they have you use like the hover nozzle, or not the hover nozzle, the rocket nozzle, as well as like the jet propulsion nozzle that like sends you into like this uncontrollable dash. I kind of wish that they were present in more levels. Like they leverage those mechanics more than they do, because those were fun. Also, something weird. You know, like in Mario 64, when you unlock the wing cap, it just, when there's a level with a wing cap, you just have it.
Yeah.
When you unlock the metal cap, any level that has like a square for a metal cap, it's just activated and you just use it. When you unlock your different nozzles, like your rocket and like your jet propulsion nozzle, I forget what it's called, in Sunshine, it only unlocks it in like the main hub, and every level you go into, if it's available in there, you have to find the place to unlock it in those levels too.
That's obnoxious.
Yeah, it's a nuisance. And obnoxious is a good word for it, because you just, if you want someone to use those mechanics in the level, just unlock it at the appropriate point in the game and just let them use it.
Yeah.
There's also an annoyance with those blooper levels where you have to surf on the squids.
Yeah. The bloopers.
My biggest irritant with that is
the squidlings.
On the inklings.
The inklings. Oh yeah. Man, I got the name wrong.
When you bump into anything,
you essentially die.
You die like and get kicked out. Like, come on! Like I got it. And there's one in the harbor. The first time you do it, it's like a race, and the second time you have a inkling level in the harbor, it is. You do a lap around the harbor and you avoid obstacles and collect red coins. And in that, there's a timer. Once you get all the red coins, the timer stops. But if you still bump into anything, you die and you get kicked out and you have to do it again.
Yep.
And guys, come on. Like, you clearly, like, you know something has changed because the timer goes off. Just like let me like bump into something to get off the damn squid and go get the thing. I accomplished the goal. Like I think that there are some really like if they were totally remaking this game from scratch and like keeping all like the levels the same, that can't be something that they think is good design now. They've had to have learned like that's bad to. You've accomplished the goal, but still don't bump into anything because you'll have to do it again. Ugh. Come on. But, you know, the more I play the game, the more sort of momentum I get with it. It gets easier to deal with all, like, the little quirks of it. Overall, I've had a good time, but I definitely have more, like, issues. I've had more frustrations with Sunshine than I had replaying Mario 64.
Be interesting how Galaxy's gonna go.
You know, it's funny because at the beginning of the year, I sort of like set a goal of replaying a Wii game every month, which I was doing up until this month, because they, up until September, because they announced this Mario pack. And I was already in the middle of replaying Galaxy. I had gotten 70 of the stars in the Wii version. And then they announced this. And I was like, well, I'm not going to play this whole thing. And
that's a
then,
very good point.
And then replay it again when it comes to the Switch. So I abandoned my run-through of Galaxy on Wii. And like, when I finish Sunshine, I'll probably wait a few weeks and then pick up Galaxy and replay it on Switch rather than continue my Wii run.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've also been playing a lot of Mario Pit Cross, which is on the Super Nintendo Online. It's a Pit Cross game. There's nothing really much to say about it, but I like those. They're little puzzle games. I like those. And I've also been replaying the Resident Evil remake, as well as Code Veronica. I've been replaying them both. Because it is Halloween.
Seriously, how do you find time to play all these games? You have a job where you get a decent amount of hours, you have children, you have a wife,
I don't play this many games.
I've been on vacation for the past 9 days, so that's helped.
I didn't know you went on vacation for 9 days. Yeah, I also went to the beach.
Yeah, I took we took the weekend off to go to the beach, but I've also been on vacation from work since the 6th, I think.
What the hell, man? Why have we not been doing game night?
I went to the beach. yeah, I've been doing a lot of gaming. Then look at the Resident Evil remake. It is really fun. I like these games because they're very procedural. Even when you know what to do, you can think of different ways. Okay, but if I do things in this order and carry these items with me, I can do it faster, or I can do it more efficiently. And these games, it's really fun to see speed runs when they're actually they're not exploiting any glitches or anything, just kind of playing through the game, to see how high level play and what items they abandon where, and what things they choose to pick up and what things they choose not to. It's fun to see that sort of thing, and it's fun to replay these games when you're familiar with them, because you start to think of usually I would, when I get this key, I would go back to this room first, but if I did this other room, I can loop around in a different direction and avoid enemies, which is something I've been doing in the remake of the first one that I've been playing. I did lose some progress. What was it that I did? I was neglecting to carry some healing items, and I got into a situation where I was a hunter. A powerful enemy was in between me and the closest save box, and it murdered me, and I lost about an hour of progress.
That sucks.
But, it led me to do things in a different order, which saved me some time. I was able to get through the section that took me an hour. I was probably able to do it in a half hour instead, because I did it in a different way. And I avoided enemies doing it, so it worked out pretty well in general. It still took me an hour and a half to get through that area because I lost progress. But Code Veronica, I've been playing that one over the past several days. Code Veronica I picked up yesterday, and I played through the first disc, plus a little bit of the second disc in one day, because I'm pretty familiar with that game. that game, I have down to a pretty good science.
Oh, God.
I know exactly where I want to go and when. There are still a couple of things. That's such an interesting thing about these games, though. It's because there's always ways that you can refine the way that you're playing it. Because for years, when I get to a section of the game where, I'm going to talk to you like you've played this game.
I've extensively, I helped design it. So, I was on the team. So Steve was my idea.
So once you've used the
is it Steve or Steve?
Steve, yes. Steve.
Yeah, Steve. Yeah. Okay.
Once you've used the silver key to get the second indigo plate in the room where there's the two banders.
Oh, man, that was a tough room.
Yeah. Well, you equip some bowgun powder, and you can take them each out.
Of course, I mean, if you did do that, I mean,
clearly,
what a noob! I don't.
But they have such funny sort of hit detection patterns. So basically, when you shoot one of them, I'm sure you know.
Yeah.
With one of your explosive bowgun bolts, it has invincibility frames to where you can pump for so much damage you're not actually doing anything, but if you sort of go through the animation where you raise your gun, shoot it, lower your gun, then raise your gun again and shoot it again, you've pretty much let it run through its cycle of having invincibility. So, and I've actually watched breakdowns of this. It's not it's an interesting, to me only, technical aspect of the game, to where it's not so much that they're invincible, it's that they're not going to
take the damage.
No, because they are taking the damage. It's so weird. It's such a weird quirk of the game where you can you shoot them with the two bowgun bolts, and that exhausts their HP to where they would die. But if you shoot it when it's going through its stun cycle, it's been hit by an explosion, so it's stunned.
Yeah.
You hit it again, and it takes away the HP. Because it was going through the stun animation, it's not going to trigger
the death.
It's not going to trigger the death. So its HP is zero, but it's not going to die because it was in the middle of a stun animation. So if you equip any other weapon and shoot it real quick, like, you'll kill it because it has zero HP left. But it's just more efficient to aim, shoot, lower, aim, shoot, lower, because you won't have to, like, bother re-equipping anything. Anyway, I kind of like that game. But I was at the part. You get that indigo plate from those two banders, and I was going back to the prison island to put the indigo plate on the door behind the guillotine. God, this is such a fascinating game to describe to anyone who has never played it before. There's a guillotine.
I mean, there's one of those in my bathroom.
So. Of course, yeah. So, at that point of the game...
The tubs there, it's just much easier to clean up everything.
Sure. At that point in the game, I'm usually switching back to the bow gun and using the arrows in order to conserve bullets for the Antarctic base. But I found that I burn through more healing items because the bow gun, it's just the regular arrows, just don't have enough stopping power. And I'm really not sure what point in the game I would switch that out. I maybe end up using it earlier on because things are in such close quarters by the end of the... By the time you get to past the 50% mark that you don't really use that weapon anymore except when you're using, like, explosives on it. I don't know. It's like, making me rethink the sort of, like, weapon rotation that I go through because, you know, I'll start... You know, of course, you start with the handgun. Use the knife as often as you can.
You hoard magnum bullets.
You always hoard the magnum bullets. I'm also starting to rethink where and when I'm using grenade rounds because there are some more efficient ways to defeat bosses. Like the grenade launcher is a weapon you get, you know, relatively early in the game, but it's not a weapon that I use a whole lot. Usually I'm ending the game with a lot of grenade rounds.
I used to love the mind thrower in Resident Evil 4.
Oh, yeah?
You used that thing? I loved that mind thrower. Some of the additional add-ons you can get for it made it really fun.
Hmm.
It was homing. Oh, it was great. I really liked that thing. Which, I had a friend of mine who streams.
Yeah?
Which, you know, he just started. So he gets, like, four people now and then. And he was playing through Resident Evil 4 for the first time. So,
oh, yeah?
It was fun sitting there and be like, no, don't use those magnum bullets. Like, no, don't.
What are you doing? Stop.
Stop it. Put the gun away. Just wait. And just watching him go through some of the early struggles, like... I watched him play through the first horde that you get in that town before the bell rings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, where you gotta kill the 15 villagers before they...
I was like, fuck it, like, he was getting a little... The guy with the chainsaw, he was just unloading the shotgun.
Oh, no, he didn't go that way, did he? Oh, yeah, no.
Through the chainsaw. The bag head, oh.
Yep.
But, man, that was a good time.
Yeah, if you go up the route near, like, the... Behind all the houses near those two shacks, you'll trigger him. So you kind of want to avoid that area early in the game, you know, unless you're doing a new game plus and you're going to collect all the money from him.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, the first time I played that game, I'd been playing, you know, Resident Evil games for a little bit. So my thought was like, oh, there's a lot of enemies here. All right, I'm going to go inside, close the door, get my bearings. You know, they're not going to follow me. And so, like, oh shit, they're breaking down the door. What the fuck? They're coming through the windows. Oh, get upstairs. Oh, it was panic-inducing.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it was really, like, a different flavor of Resident Evil because, like, any other Resident Evil game previous to this, if you go through a door, like, you're fine. They're not going to follow you through the door. Why would they?
They don't know how to work doorknobs.
No, they sure don't.
But those were zombies, not parasite-infested villagers.
Right. So, you got anything else?
I can talk very briefly, because it's not going to be a very interesting thing for you, but World of Warcraft came out with their pre-patch, so...
Stand by. Let's take a break, and we'll come back with that.
Got it.
of Warcraft. Hit me.
So, they came out with their pre-patch because the overall Shadowlands expansion got delayed.
Okay.
So, the pre-patch came out, so that means the level squish happened, so we went from 120, and now we're down to 50.
Oh, wow, 50. I thought when you last talked about it, I thought you were saying 60.
Well, that's going to be the new max level, but 10 levels you have to do through the Shadowlands expansion, through the new stuff.
Right.
So, now we're down to level 50. And it's interesting because Mitch, Jeff, and I, your brother and Mitch, we're messing around with this, and you know, we're right now. It's weird because it's come out and now it's this new stuff to do, but there's not really anything. There's not new stuff to do. I said that wrong. There's new things to do with the classes. So right now we're like kind of playing it, just kind of getting a feel for the new classes, how the classes changed and stuff like that. I'm liking some of the changes. Some of them didn't really change much at all, but yeah, I'm excited about it. I just wanted to say that it's looking pretty good. The level squish is interesting, and the new layouts, my elemental shamans are back. They're looking pretty good, which they've been shit for the past like two expansions. So I'm happy to see that I feel like there's potential for them. So I feel like this is going to be good. So, yeah, that's all I was going to say. Just
cool.
It happened. It's interesting. I'm excited to see what happens next.
Well, let's close this out with one last thing.
Okay.
I've been reading a comic book.
Ooh.
And it's not X-Men.
What?
Yeah, this one is
I thought you were contractually obligated to go through X-Men.
Well, so the newest run of X-Men is sort of helmed by this writer, Jonathan Hickman. And I was interested in seeing what else he has written. And he wrote this, I think it was like 75 issues, if I'm not mistaken. So it was a pretty long-running series called East of West. And it is a sort of dystopian future. And of course, as like the name would imply, it's like a Western, a futuristic Western. And the sort of world is set up as... There's, of course, the American Civil War, where, you know, the North was fighting the South. And in the middle of this, of the Civil War...
It's always North fighting South. It's never the East fighting the West. Like, it's never, like...
Well,
no one's ever divided down the middle like that.
It's kind of like, was it like this broken mirror, like this sort of version of reality where, you know, if everything in the world was happening, you know, as history happened and then something changed. And so you have like this
like Iron Sky.
I don't understand that reference.
Something about Nazis and they end up going into space. I saw it in Netflix and I read the synopsis. I'm like, this is the weirdest thing I've ever seen.
Okay. So
I don't know why I made that reference. Because I've never even seen the movie.
but yeah, like the Civil War dragged on longer. Native Americans got involved, and it's like sort of their own faction. There's like some sort of like world-altering calamity. I think it was like some sort of like asteroid hitting Earth. But basically, Civil War drags on even longer. It eventually ends with the North and the South deciding to be different nations. So I guess the South won because that's what they wanted. I don't know if I feel right about that. But then also, like, the rest of America is kind of, like, divided up. So you have, like, the Union is the North and the Confederacy is the South. Then you have the Endless Nation, which is sort of like the upper Midwest. Sort of like Ohio to Minnesota is sort of like a Native American territory. And then, like, the Louisiana, like, then that sort of, like, southern area of the United States... from like the Louisiana Purchase, if you remember that from history class, that becomes the kingdom, and it is a sort of nation ruled by a king who is a black man. I don't know if the implication is that like this is like a nation of black people. I haven't really seen much of their citizens, just the royal family, so I don't know if that's the case or not. And you have like the Republic of Texas, and at some point during the Civil War, when the North and South were fighting, as it was dragging on past, you know, the time where it ended in actual history, people from China came over, like some sort of like political refugees from China came over, and sort of like the West Coast is like this China, like nation of people from China. So you have like all these different factions throughout the world, and then like smack in the middle of the country, or you know, the continent, is like where there's some sort of like world ending calamity. And there's like a sort of like culty religion associated with it, as well as the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse.
Yeah, they really like fresco.
Uh-huh. And they get those frescas and almond joys. And the sort of culty religion is kind of based around wanting to bring forth the end of the world. And the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse are trying to, you know, help bring it along as well. But at a certain point, like, and sort of like start, and you get all this backstory as, you know, you're progressing through the actual like happenstance of the actual books. At a certain point, before like the books even start, the horseman Death decides he's not going to associate with the other three horsemen anymore, and he starts going off and doing
these dicks.
Yeah. He starts going off and doing his own thing. He fathers a child with a human woman. Not sure how that works. But the child is then sort of like abducted, taken from the mother. And then sort of like put away in this like high-tech prison where they're sort of grooming this child to be like the Antichrist. Essentially, like the crux that brings forth the end of the world.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's very culty. It's very violent too. Very bloody. It's an interesting sort of like setup to a world. Like they do some cool world building stuff, but like every character that I've encountered so far is not a good person. Like they're all just kind of despicable people. And they're all like very violent and conniving, and they're like no one's like dealing with any sort of like internal struggle. No one has any sort of like internal like goals or goes through like is going through any like changes of character, like on sort of path to becoming a better person or even a different person. Like all of the struggles so far, and I'm like 12 issues in. Are all externals. Like, okay, we're going to go to war with these people, or I'm going to go to this place and try to find this person, or I'm going to like hire this hitman to try to take out all these other people. So I don't know if I'm going to be in it for the long haul. I do see where Jonathan Hickman, like his writing style for like all the new X-Men stuff, it's pretty consistent with his writing style for this and that. There's a lot of world building stuff he does sort of like in the middle of all these other story things that are happening. He does like the sort of like blank pages with some text on it, and the text will have like some brief descriptions of things that have happened or like conversations between people, like you're reading prose instead of a comic book. So, you know, I can see like that what he, how he is writing in X-Men is consistent with how he was writing in East of West. I don't know. Like, it's interesting. Like, the art is all very good. It's interesting to look at. But it's just, like, none of the characters. Like, I don't have anyone to root for. Like, I don't want to root for the weird culty people because they're in a weird cult. Fuck them. I don't want to root for, like, the Horseman of Death because I don't know what the fuck he's going to do when he finds the kid because he's looking for the kid, too. I don't want to root for any of the leaders of the nation. They're not good people. So there's no like character in there that's like I can like latch onto and follow. Okay, so you're the guy who I want to be the last guy standing at the end, because I don't give a fuck if any of them die at this point.
Interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's East of West. I don't know. Maybe I'll report back on it in a month if I keep reading, see where it goes. But next up is going to be the retro show.
What's on tap? You said via text with Ryan that this is going to be a good one.
There are a couple of games. Rayman and I think Jet Force Gemini.
Ooh, it's Jet Force Gemini. I don't even know if that's a good game. I just...
It's a fun name.
Yeah.
It's for damn sure. Jet
Force Gemini.
We should hook up the N64. Maybe over the weekend. Do game night or something. Play some Jet Force Gemini. I think it has co-op.
Ooh.
But I don't think the co-op is quite as robust as you would want it to be.
No, probably not.
Anyway.
Like, so, I'm the hat.
You're Cappy.
Dumbest co-op I've ever seen.
And Rayman 2, which is, by most regards, a pretty good game. I don't know if I'm going to pick that up just yet. I might bank that for a later date. We'll see. But then there are a bunch of movies and some... basically, that's all I looked at. Some interesting movies.
Give us a teaser on one movie.
I'm not supposed to talk about it.
You're not supposed to talk about it?
That's the teaser. The first rule is I'm not supposed to talk about it.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So then there were a bunch of other cool movies. Like some cool horror movies and stuff, because it was, of course, October. So you're going to get the Halloween season movies. So that'll be a fun one to talk about. And then it'll be...
the official show.
Yeah, and we'll wrap it all up with the official show at the end of the month. Yeah. This will be another good one. Maybe talk some more Genshin Impact. That's a new release.
If it comes out on Switch. I don't know if it's on Switch yet or not. We got to take a look. But you definitely should try that one out.
Yeah.
Because it's... I'm interested to see what you think of it.
Have you tried Hades?
I have not.
Everyone keeps talking about this Hades game. Yeah. And apparently it's really good.
I'm burnt out, roguelikes.
Okay.
I'm burnt out. I cannot do it anymore.
Fair enough.
If I see a roguelike, I'm just skipping it.
There's a lot of Greek mythology in it.
I bet there is. I bet there is.
Maybe I can convince Ryan to try it out.
There's a lot of Greek myth.
Yeah.
And you know me with Greek myth.
Yep. But yeah, that's it. That's the end. Till next time.
So long.
Later.